Well, I'll tell you, there's a couple things that I really detest. I hate to turn on the television set and hear some preacher just really shaking people down for money. Don't you hate that? That's not going to happen this morning, but we are going to talk about money. And the second thing that I hate is for someone that's speaking at a seminar or in a church to really frown and make people feel guilty for making money. Because if you're a business person, isn't business about making money? Isn't it about providing for your family and doing well, being able to provide for your children and for maybe even your children's children? But doing well in that. So there's really no excuse for looking down. It is God's gift to you. So having said that, what is this thing about money? Well, it's the thing about grace. Grace and giving and money go hand in hand. Grace is about receiving from God and being so changed from within that it changes every aspect of your life. And it gets right on down from your heart to your soul to your pocketbook. Do you believe that? But on the other hand, the person that is unconverted, untouched by God's grace, probably feels that life is a lot about how much money he makes, that his significance in life is determined by his dollar accounts, by the job that he makes, by the status that he makes, and therefore life is measured in terms of finance. What I want us to see this morning in particular is that there is a mindset that Jesus wants us to have, a mindset of grace that says you're devoted to God's kingdom and use your money accordingly. Well, I want us to see a video for about 3 minutes, and it comes from one of my favorite movies. It's a clip from The Family Man. Maybe you've seen this, but in this show, here's this guy that, you know, he's just super rich, and he's on the way up. But one night he gets changed where his life, he gets to see what it would be like if he turned another way and devoted himself toward making relationships in a family. It takes him a long time to get it. So let's see the mindset that he's got. Let's look at clip number 2, the move to the city.
So what's the big surprise? You didn't rent this for the weekend, did you?
Think bigger.
For the week?
This place is a perk, Kate.
A perk?
Mm-hmm.
For what?
A company called PK Lassiter Investment House uses it to attract new executives. I'm going into arbitrage, honey. It turns out I have a knack for it.
Jack, what are you talking about?
I'll be making twice what I make now, plus a hefty bonus, and that's just a start. And we can live in this apartment practically rent-free until we find a place of our own.
Are you out of your mind?
I don't think so. This is going to be a better life for all of us. We've put Annie and Josh into private schools.
Annie goes to a great school, Jack.
I'm talking about the best schools in the country here, Kate.
Jack, what could you possibly be thinking about? What about my job?
Well, I mean, this is New York City. It's like the needy people capital of the world. Your Jersey clients aren't a tenth as pathetic as the ones you could find here.
I can't even believe you're talking about moving back into the city, Jack. I thought the reason that we left was because we didn't want to raise the kids here.
No. This is the center of the universe. If I were living in Roman times, I would live in Rome. Where else? And today, America is the Roman Empire. New York is Rome itself. John Lennon.
Jack.
Listen, okay, you know something? I'm detecting like a funky tension here, and this was supposed to be a happy day. So guess what? I don't need this. We don't have to live here. Forget it. I'll commute. I'll drive to work.
In traffic, Jack, it's over an hour each way. That's like 3 hours every day. When are you ever going to see the kids?
Kate, you're not understanding me. I'm talking about a perfect life, a great life. Everything we pictured when we were young, the whole package. You said so yourself. Life has thrown us a few surprises, so we made sacrifices. Well, guess what? Now I can finally get us back on track. I can do that, Kate. I want to do that. I need to do that as a man for all of us. Please just think about this for 1 second. No more lousy restaurants. No more clipping coupons. No more shoveling snow.
Then get a big, dumb snowblower, Jack. Don't go get a new career without even telling me about it. And don't take Annie out of a school that she loves, and don't move us out of a house we've become a family in.
Don't you see? I'm talking about us finally having a life that other people envy.
Oh, Jack. They already do envy us.
Well, if you've seen the rest of this movie, you know that Jack Campbell does finally get it, that life is more than about money. But the people that are not touched by grace think that it is about money. It's about how much money you make and your status in life. I think when Jesus gave this parable here, telling it to his disciples, I think there's people that followed him that didn't make a lot of money. And there's some people that came to him wanting eternal life. They were called rich young rulers. And the reason was they had lots of money. It's people all different shades. And today we're talking to people that have all kinds of income levels. Jesus speaks to every one of us. And this parable is for us about our attitude toward life. If we have the grace of God, if we have freely received from God, Jesus says, freely give. And over he will warn us that life does not consist in the abundance of things which we possess. But it's not about all those adaptations. It's not things that I could give you. But it's about a life that's been touched by grace. If you believe that you are loved and forgiven by God, that you are the recipient of God's grace, you cannot help but have that grace come down into how you utilize your money. So he tells this parable. And it's about this crook, isn't it? A crook of all things. And Jesus says, boy, this guy was a schemer, and he got caught. He got caught embezzling or I'm not sure what it was, embezzling, making bad loans. But his owner, who was probably extremely wealthy, called him in and said, you've been managing all my accounts, but not anymore. We're going to take a few days here. We're going to catch up, and you can no longer be the manager. So what's this guy doing? He starts thinking to himself, I got to do something. I got to have something. So he starts scheming. He starts conniving. Now, what's important for us to see is that one moment, this guy is fired and desperate, and the next moment, he's conniving about what he's going to do about life, and he goes to the people and says, how much you owe the master? Okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to start reducing this. Now, I'm not sure if he's a good guy or a bad guy here. You can read some reviews on this, but is he a bad guy? I kind of think so. He may be the kind of guy that's calling those loans in and saying, now, look, we know you're not going to pay this, but just write half the amount and pay us now. Half the amount, and we'll get some money. And then the master would say, hey, I didn't think I was going to get any money out of those people, but at least he's shaking them down for half or 60% or 80%. That may be the interpretation some people give. But on the other hand, I think he's a bad guy. He's a bad guy going saying, well, you know, okay, this is what you owe, but I want you to reduce it by this amount. Because we value your customer, you know, the customer's always right, blah, blah, blah. Write it down, 50% is all you owe. Well, that's pretty good news, isn't it? I'll be doing business with you forever. And maybe it's a little blackmail. You know, when he gets fired, he'll be able to go to those people and say, you know, didn't I do something nice for you? Didn't I save you a lot of money? And so he will be maybe in line for a job or at least some help. It will ingratiate himself to those folks. Well, the story of the parable is that this man has gone from you're fired because you've been swindling to the master saying you are really a genius. Yeah, I mean, you've really gone to work conniving and you've beaten me out of a lot of money, but you've shown just how crooks can be smart. And Jesus is not ashamed to use this kind of parable, a parable that we've all heard about in life. I mean, how many of you, everybody's heard stories about money market managers or people on Wall Street that have connived people out of millions or billions of dollars. And we're very angry at that. How'd they do it? Well, they were connivers. They were shrewd. They were smart. And thankfully, Most of them, many of them got caught. Maybe there'll be more of them get caught. But anyway, in this particular case, the master says, this guy is terribly smart. And Jesus says, okay, let's consider this. That the people of this world are more smart than the people of the kingdom. Now, what does that mean? Or they're shrewder. They act more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of light. Well, I think when you get the kingdom inside of you, when you're really touched by grace, I think something happens in your heart. You begin to turn on for the kingdom of God. But sometimes you don't. Sometimes it takes a long time, and you maybe you don't go to church like you ought to. Maybe you're saying, you know, I just don't go to church like I ought to. I don't give like I ought to. I know I ought to be more involved. You ever say that? What's happening? You're basically saying that the love of God that came into my heart isn't really motivating me to do what I know I should do and what I ought to be doing. I guess I just am not quite the person in love with God that I thought I was. On the other hand, this crook, when he saw the task before him, he got to work immediately. He was involved. He knew what he had to do. He worked swiftly to get the job done. I think that's what Jesus is saying here. Is that when you've got a task in front of you, if you've been motivated by grace, you need to be involved. You need to be working hard. You need to give yourself to it. Now, having said that, he goes on to say about something rather startling here. Worldly wealth, which the older versions call unrighteous mammon. Unrighteous because most of the time wealth is used in an unrighteous way. It's used in the way that says it's about me, it's about my pleasures, it's about my life. But it doesn't have to be that way. Money should be neutral, should be used purposely for the kingdom, intentionally, as someone says. So Jesus is saying here this unworldly, this worldly wealth can be used to gain friends for yourself. Now, I didn't want to call this make friends for myself, but that's what Jesus says, make friends for yourself. But the ideal is that they're serving in the kingdom so that they will be welcome into the heavenly realm, into the eternal abode. So I think it's talking about serving Jesus, serving the kingdom, using your money to help people who are in need or for kingdom purposes, right? So in a sense, I'd rather say it's about working for Jesus, but it's doing something for yourself so that someday God will say, well done, Donna, well done. Your name. I need to ring somebody else, Donna, not make you conspicuous. Okay. Well done, Tim, Joey. Well done, good and faithful servant. And to the 5 talents, you get 5 more. And to the 2 talents, you get 2 more. Who knows what we're going to be doing someday in heaven? But it isn't going to be just sitting on clouds and eating shrimp all day. It's going to be something that God has purposely designed for us that we are well fitted for throughout eternity. So, what is it about this worldly wealth that we can use right now to make friends for ourselves? Well, let me tell you, I think it was right after Christmas this year. Could have been before Christmas, I'm not really sure, after Christmas. But we got an email from some friends that we knew about 18 years ago. Name is Paul Myers, Paul and Dina Myers. I can remember the name. They were in Orange, Texas. And that was about 20 years ago when I was involved in ministry there. Got an email from them. It touched me. I had to shed a little tear over that. You don't know Paul Myers and Dina Myers, but Paul, when we were in Orange at that time, the unemployment was very high. And Paul had some very great gifts, but his company was laying off his particular field. And so they cut him from a full-time salary to 20 hours a week. And we knew with 3 small children that was going to be very hard for him to make it. So the church went out of the way to try to help financially. But I remember him saying that in a few months, they'll probably lay me off. I said, well, Paul, you got to do something. Well, we'd like to stay in this area. So, you know, he's getting his resume out. But then eventually they did lay him off. But I said, Paul, you know, you've got to come to a realization that you need a job for your family. Church wants to help all it can, but you're not in the employment business. We can't help forever. So you need to send those resumes out all over the place, not just here in Orange, not just Beaumont, but maybe send them to Dallas, Houston. And Paul was really down on himself. Now, I'm going to say this. I don't want to offend anybody, but Paul was down on himself. He weighed about 350 pounds, and he looked like he was carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders. So I tried to go over and encourage Paul all that I could. And I said, Paul, you need a makeover, and I'd like to help you. At that time, I was into jogging. I'd jog 3 miles every day on this wonderful outdoor track that Orange had. I said, you know, probably when you get this job, it would look better if you could lose a few pounds. You felt better about yourself. So why don't we work on yourself? And I'd take him out to the track. And I thought, well, old Paul, he'd probably do a mile or two and go home. And, you know, I hope then he can, you know, cut back on the chicken a little bit or something else. But Paul just got into it. He said, you know, I've got the time, and you're right. And Paul would go out there because he had the time, and he wouldn't walk 1 or 2 miles. He'd walk 10 miles. And he'd go out there morning and evening. And he was sending those resumes out. But what we saw in Paul as he was sending those resumes out is that Paul went from 350 pounds to a little below 200. I mean, that was before The Biggest Loser was ever popular. He just said, I'm going to do this. And he began to feel better about himself. He began to lead singing in church and had a new enthusiasm. Then he got a job in Montana. It was a good job. He's a very gifted draftsperson for some company. So he got the job. He felt good about himself. I helped him move up there. 18 years later, I get this email thanking me. Why? Thanking me for a tough time in their life that I took some time with him. Now, I may have given him a few dollars. It might have been 50 or 100. I know there's people in the congregation that had a lot more money than I did, and they helped him a lot more. And I'm thankful for those people. But you see what he's saying? Probably what he's saying to me in terms of encouragement, maybe any financial help you gave me, probably he could say to others, thank you for the help that you made me. You made a difference in my life at a very important time. Well, what do you think? Do you know anybody like that? I'm always glad when I move into a community to hear stories. And I hear stories here about people that have extra money and you're willing to help. Maybe it's $50, $100. Maybe it's a couple hundred bucks. Maybe it's more if you've got the means. Somebody needs help and you're willing to help. What is that saying? You've taken seriously what Jesus has to say. This is good for churches too. When I got out of seminary, of course, there's a lot of verses in the Bible that talks about giving, talks about helping the poor, talks about doing mission work, talks about a lot of things. But I think sometimes people don't get it. Sometimes churches don't get it. We went to a church in Richardson, Texas, which is right outside of Dallas, Elaine and myself, and we fell in love with those people. That was when I was in between ministry and writing my thesis on Proverbs. And I fell under the tutelage of Larry James. Larry always stood before a congregation like this and preached without notes. That's why I preach without notes. Larry always said, I can preach better without notes than I can with notes, even if I forget something. So that's where I am. But Larry helped a lot of people. He was very benevolent, very caring. He networked with other ministers in town and created a network, not within just Churches of Christ, but all churches. And Larry created what he called the Care Corps. You know, not just a benevolent group, but a care corps of people whose responsibility was to meet people at church and to help them and to interview them. And their philosophy was, we can always provide someone a meal. We may not be able to supply them a job. We may can help them with their rent. We can help them in the emergency situation. But most of all, we can hear them. We can listen to them. We can love them. And we can help them in a time of crisis. And it was very influential throughout that Dallas area. It influenced me. And then I moved to a church in Orange, Texas, and I had that type of attitude. Orange had a lot of executives that were on petroleum row. And you know what that means? Petroleum row is where a lot of people had a lot of money. They were executives for DuPont and Texaco and a lot of those companies down there. And I think their attitude in church was that way. And when they did a church budget, everybody had their budget, and I was just amazed by this. They always had an attitude, if we don't spend this money, they're going to take it away from us. So we've got to come up with something whether we need it or not. And I've heard people say that in the government. And it just horrified me. Did you know we bought a printing press in a little 350-member church that would rival what printing presses had in an industrial complex? We bought equipment for that little church, I think well over $25,000 or $30,000 at the time. Why did we do it? Because if we didn't spend it, we'd lose it. I've sat in educational meetings where people would go over, how can we spend this money so we don't lose this? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm looking at the benevolent budget, and somehow I don't think we've got it. And it was impossible to change that mentality. At least it was for me. Now, I think there's probably a lot of churches somewhere in between there. We know we have responsibilities. Churches don't always change. Churches think, well, you know, maybe that's the way we do it in government. Maybe we do it here. How would Jesus want it done? When you make friends, I always think making friends is about doing that. When I think about making friends, I wonder how many people have made friends through Upwards Basketball. You know, I sat in your office the other day, Pete, talked to your hygienist who said she's thankful that she's coaching for Upward Basketball the second year in a row. And I'm thinking, you know, here's not a member of our church, but here is one of the Forest Mill friends. Isn't that right? She's thankful for that. And sometimes around the community, I hear people that say, well, you know, we know about this church out there, and we're thankful for what y'all do in the community and for your attitude. And they may be talking about Upwards. They may be talking about benevolence. You know what I'm thinking? Friends of the Forest Mill Church. You know, somebody asked me not long ago if I want a new computer in my office, and I said, nah, I wouldn't mind having an update. Maybe someday when it doesn't work, but you know, I do word processing. I send stuff to Kathy. I don't need a high-speed computer. I'd rather use it in benevolence. And that's just the way I feel. If you can spend an extra $100 and update my computer from time to time or keep it from some virus invading it or something like that, that would be very good. But, you know, having the latest computer isn't going to make friends in this community. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have technical people who deal with the sound because we need good sound equipment in church. But the bottom line is, isn't that a support mechanism? We need to be very careful that we're using our funds wisely to make friends. I'm thinking like maybe in your educational program, Linda, with these little kids, when I see them in these programs that they're doing in church and the things, I'm thinking, man, here are kids whose families are coming. Maybe they're not even members of the Forest Mill Church, but they're certainly our friends, aren't they? We're making friends. It takes money to support those things, doesn't it? Do you believe in Upwards Basketball? Do you believe in those little kids program? Do you believe in the mission work that Justin and others are doing? You're making some friends around the world, aren't you? Now, let's go on what the Lord is saying here. Because I think that helps us to see that making friends, someday the Lord is going to say, well done. Come on in, because you've used the wealth that you've had upon the earth well. And so he says here, who can be trusted with a very little can be trusted in much. And whoever is dishonest with a very little will be dishonest in much. And then he talks about true riches. What are true riches? I think the Lord is talking about his kingdom, isn't he? He's talking about spiritual things. And he's saying, if the grace of God doesn't soak all the way down so that it doesn't get into your pocketbook, and if you're dishonest there, if you're not willing to share a little bit there and really go out of your way shrewdly working for the kingdom, who's going to give you an opportunity to share true wealth, spiritual things? I've known people want to come in, they want to start a program, they want to get somebody in the program. Who do they want to get? Let's call brother so-and-so. Maybe it will help him be faithful. He hadn't been to church in 6 months, but let's put him in charge of this program. I'm sorry, but I'm not for that. I'd like to see brother so-and-so in church or sister so-and-so in church. But you know, if you start a program in the church, what you want is somebody that will carry that faithfully. You want somebody that will show up, who is known as someone who loves the Lord. I believe that in church, whether it's Upwards Basketball or whether it's your children's program or whatever, missionary work, whatever, isn't that a lot of the faithfulness showing up, saying I'm involved? And if you can find somebody that just give them a small opportunity to serve, just a little small area, why? So the next thing, they can double that. They can become a little bit more involved. They can show and demonstrate faithfulness in one area, right? I always think about Marilyn Hyatt over here. Don't you call me to read in class. Okay, Marilyn. Then about 9 months later, Marilyn's called me up and said, you know, the Lord showed me that I shouldn't say that. Now Marilyn's going down to jail and reading and teaching and testifying and witnessing. You know what she's saying? She said, I was wrong. I think when people step up to the plate and they show they're faithful in a little thing, what did the Lord say? More will be given to you. More will be given. You will be shown that you are faithful and trustworthy. Now, here we come to this parable that Jesus has used several times. No one can serve two masters. You've heard it. You know what it means. You can't truly devote yourself to money and to God. Can you imagine Jack Campbell with his attitude on that video? Jack Campbell trying to serve God with that attitude. The perfect life is about making money. It's not about clipping coupons. It's about going to the best restaurants. It's about going to the best school. Having that kind of attitude that he wants to be on the rising star, and put that in the attitude of serving God. Jesus said you can't do it. Now, that's not to make anybody feel guilty. If your business is doing well, I say thank God. If you live in a nice house, thank God. If you drive a nice car, thank God. But is the grace of God active in your heart so that you say, God is first and foremost. God is the master, not my desire for wealth. And then the last thing that Jesus had to say here were some people who the scripture says love money, Pharisees. Now, you know, sometimes if you set a budget and you say, well, I'm going to tithe to the church or I'm going to tithe to the Lord, that can sort of dedicate yourself where you know that you are going to be giving, but that doesn't guarantee anything because the Pharisees believed in tithing. They were scrupulous about tithing. But Jesus says they love money and they're the people who justify themselves. I don't know. We're all people that justify themselves, don't we? We all have reasons why we're not more involved in church, or why we don't show up, or why we don't give more, or why we do this, or why we don't do that. And Jesus said it's about justifying ourselves where we are. Isn't the truth is that we're not as shrewd as that rich guy, that guy that connived, because we're not as interested in it. Isn't that it? But we're interested in what touches our heart. And if God has touched our heart with his grace, if we've received his love and his mercy, and we're flying high and we're saying, wow, God, thank you for blessing me, how can we not help someone in need? How can we not be more involved in wanting to do something for the church, even though we might not do much? Something. Start out somewhere. Get involved. Maybe just as a popcorn popper at Upwards, or maybe being a coach, or maybe you're going to be on the mission committee or something. If it's nothing more than showing up and learning from some of the people and some of their attitudes, isn't that it? Well, that's my lesson on money. Not about budgets, and it's not about necessarily trying to get more money out of you, and it's not about tithing. It's about your heart. And Jesus is saying, that's it. If the kingdom means everything to you, it will mean everything, including the way you use your money. That's all I've got to say. It's the end of the lesson. So when we sing the invitation hymn, are you letting Jesus in your heart? Has the grace of God really come in to say, you are loved and you're forgiven? If you need to accept that love of Jesus Christ, why not respond now? Let's stand and sing the invitation hymn.